I'm Greg Jarrett, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, March 25th, 2019. I'm Grinnell Scott. Through this Russia investigation, the president has long said there's been no collusion. It seems the special counsel's report may have proven him right.
Well, this witch hunt has found that the president did essentially nothing wrong or nothing prosecutorial by Mr. Mueller and his investigators over the course of their investigation.
I'm Chris Foster. Cheap drugs from Canada. Pros and cons of allowing drug importation to get healthcare costs down.
We just don't have the quality and control and safety checks.
The market itself has changed. It is a global market.
And I'm Jason Chaffetz. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
On Friday, special counsel Robert Mueller handed over his Russia investigation report, an effort that included 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants, and interviews with more than 500 witnesses. Through it all, President Trump has said there was no collusion with Russia. On Sunday, Attorney General William Barr issued his summary of the special counsel's report. And there are many interesting parts that have to be delved into. I spoke with Fox News Radio's John Decker about the report, and we started with a key line that was contained in the summary, saying that the special counsel's investigation did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with Russia in its efforts to influence the 2016 U.S. presidential election. John Decker gave his take on that very statement.
What it means is that the president is backed up by what he's been saying over the course of the past 2 years. He's been saying no collusion, and this report essentially backs it up completely. What Mr. Mueller found is that neither President Trump nor any of his aides conspired or coordinated with any Russian officials in terms of trying to influence the 2016 campaign. We've heard the president say that on numerous occasions. We've seen the president tweet that dozens upon dozens of times. Just about any time the president has had a moment when he's asked about this in those opportunities when the press can ask the president this question, he has said, point blank, no collusion. And his lawyers have said the same. So I think that the president should be pleased by the findings of Mr. Mueller on this particular issue.
But as we look further into this report, John, there are many other things that are said by the special counsel that tend to raise an eyebrow. And he says, as I'll read from the summary again, the special counsel's investigation determined that there were two main Russian efforts to influence the 2016 election, and I'll just go quickly through them. The first involves attempt by a Russian organization, the Internet Research Agency, to conduct disinformation and social media operations in the United States designed to sow social discord. The second element involved the Russian government's efforts to conduct computer hacking operations designed to gather and disseminate information to influence the election. So while the president and his associates did not collude with Russia, according to the special counsel, that's not to say, as has been believed all along, that Russia did not play a role in trying to manipulate the results of the election.
Well, that's what numerous U.S. intelligence agencies have told us. The heads of those agencies, whether you're talking about the CIA or the DIA or the NSA, all in public testimony before Congress have spoken about these efforts by Russia to influence the 2016 campaign. So this particular conclusion that's put forward in the Mueller report is not new in any way to us. The thing that I think is the big takeaway here is that, yes, Russia did try to influence the 2016 campaign, but also we learn that the president and his aides did not conspire in any way with these Russian actors, these bad Russian actors, in trying to influence the 2016 campaign.
there is also, John, another part of this summary that has been really looked at by those who have been watching for this and waiting for this. And it speaks specifically to the actions of the president. It's a line that says the special counsel states that while the report does not conclude the president committed a crime, it does not exonerate him. That is an important statement for many critics of the president and many supporters of the president, and it kind of gives them both something to really hang their hat on. Talk about that, John.
Well, here we're talking about the other issue that Mr. Mueller was looking into over the course of his nearly two-year inquiry, and this is the idea about whether or not the president was obstructing justice, whether he, in his actions, tried to obstruct justice. And what the Attorney General, Bill Barr, determined is that Mr. Mueller's team drew no conclusions about whether the president illegally obstructed justice. Barr and the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, concluded that the special counsel's investigators lacked sufficient evidence to establish that the president committed that offense of obstruction of justice, but they also added that Mr. Mueller's team stopped short of exonerating the president. So I think that's something that the Democrats will certainly seize on, particularly those Democrats who lead congressional committees, the House Intelligence Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, the House Oversight Committee. They'll seize on that and perhaps move in that direction in terms of looking at whether or not, according to them, the president did attempt to obstruct justice in Mr. Mueller's investigation.
Now, the White House already putting out a statement. The special counsel did not find any collusion, did not find any obstruction. Attorney General Barr and Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein further determined that there was no obstruction. The findings of the Department of Justice are a total and complete exoneration of the President of the United States. That from White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. So, John, with that being said, I want to go to what has happened previously before this report came out. We've had indictments of people like Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, of Michael Cohen. All of these people have been indicted in some form or fashion in conjunction with the Mueller investigation. But then we hear from this report that the president, the campaign, and no one associated with the campaign had any coordination with Russia. So how do we jibe those two together? And are we talking about apples and oranges here?
Well, in some respects, we are talking about apples and oranges in the sense that you're correct. Half a dozen former aides to President Trump were indicted or convicted of crimes, but most of those crimes were for lying to investigators. And in Mr. Manafort's case, he was convicted multiple times of filing false income taxes. And these crimes took place literally years before he became the campaign chairman for President Trump. So I think that the statement that was put out by Sarah Sanders is indeed correct. And the Mueller report, I think, is one that they should be pleased with. It's ironic, of course, because this is the same investigation that the president over the course of the past 2 years has called a witch hunt. Well, this witch hunt has found that the president did essentially nothing wrong or nothing prosecutorial by Mr. Mueller and his investigators over the course of their investigation. So that is good news for the president. That is good news for the White House. But make no mistake about it, there are still major investigations that continue that concern the president. In fact, there's an investigation going on up in New York, being conducted by the Southern District of New York, federal prosecutors there. To me, that investigation has always presented for the president the biggest legal peril for the president. We're talking there about federal campaign finance law violations, possible violations in that realm. Also, we're talking about tax fraud, insurance fraud. There were subpoenas that were sent out over the course of the past few weeks concerning the Trump Inaugural Committee. Those are all investigations that continue. So while Mr. Mueller's investigation has concluded, the conclusions are being made public, in this letter that was sent to Congress. There are still investigations that are ongoing that certainly should concern the president and his legal team.
This was an illegal takedown that failed. And hopefully somebody's going to be looking at the other side. So it's complete exoneration, no collusion, no obstruction. Thank you very much.
And you just heard there from the president of the United States as he boarded Air Force One, headed back to Washington, D.C. Again, as we have said before, John, this is something the president has said many times over the past couple of years. And what he has said there proves that his theory has always been the right one in as far as this special counsel's report has determined.
Well, that's exactly right. The spokesperson for the president, White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders, essentially saying the same thing that the president just said to reporters down at Mar-a-Lago. And in addition, the president, before making those remarks, put out a tweet in which he wrote, "No collusion, no obstruction, complete and total exoneration. Keep America great." So this is essentially, as far as the president and the White House is concerned, vindication. And you're going to hear from some Democrats over the course of the next 24 to 48 hours, focusing in on the part of the Mueller letter to Congress, which shows that this indeed does not in any way show exoneration as it relates to obstruction of justice. That being said, you know, the president is not being indicted. The Mueller investigation is over. And as far as the president is concerned, he's been completely vindicated after this nearly 2-year investigation has been completed.
Well, the investigation may be complete, but the story will continue. We will hear from both sides as we continue to digest the results and the findings of the Mueller investigation report. Fox News Radio's John Decker joining us. John, thank you so much for your insight.
Thanks, Cornell.
This is Jason Chaffetz with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Prescription drugs in Canada are generally cheaper than what we pay here. Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis is pushing a bill that would allow drug imports in his state. He's been talking up the idea to President Trump. Vermont passed a similar law last year that would still need federal approval, and other states are looking to do the same thing. Former FBI Director Louis Freeh, though, has studied the idea with his consulting firm, Freeh Group International Solutions. He says the Florida bill and drug importations in general are a bad idea.
I say it's dangerous, and I say that on the basis of a lot of research and study, and I think also some experience in the prosecuting and investigative area. So we're here in Tallahassee talking about these two proposals in the state legislature that headline as reducing the cost of drugs, and the Senate bill says we get them from Canadian suppliers. The misnomer here, and I think it's a little bit misleading, is the drugs don't come from Canada. Canada has never produced pharmaceuticals. What these are medicines which will be fabricated overseas in many, many countries, including countries where you wouldn't drink the water, and then they're transshipped to the United States through Canada. And the Canadian government's been very clear. They said, we don't inspect these things. We don't vouch for them. We don't know anything about the safety. We're just, sort of an interconnector, like when you're changing planes at an international airport, but you don't go in the country. And that's why, I mean, all of our FDA commissioners, including one exiting, have always adamantly opposed the importation of foreign medicines, because we just don't have the quality and control and safety checks that we have in our current closed supply system, which does make it more expensive, but it also makes it very safe.
So these drugs end up with what, sort of Canadian shell companies? Who would we be buying them from if they're not manufactured in Canada?
You can go on the internet and find a bunch of quote-unquote Canadian pharmacies. These are some fly-by-night operations. There was a very large Canadian company who was distributing. They got fined by the FDA because they ran short of supply, and they started to use counterfeit materials as part of their ingredients and product. we've created a whole industry. It's not even a cottage industry anymore for criminals, organized criminal enterprises, who can, you know, make this stuff at very, very cheap cost, large profit, and a very low risk of detection. And if you are arrested, the penalties for importing counterfeit medicines, you know, are very minimal, and not a lot of incentive for our prosecutors to take action.
So in some, are we talking about, I guess, both sort of things like fake cancer drugs that don't actually do anything, or things where the dosages aren't regulated, or actual sort of dangerous painkillers?
Yeah, so both things. The cancer drugs you refer to, that's right. That was a case not too long ago coming out of Canada. Totally inefficacious drugs that people were taking for life-threatening conditions, didn't know that they had no active ingredients. And then on the other side, you know, the fentanyls and the opioids that are fabricated and sent into our country.
U.S. pharmaceutical companies are obviously lobbying against these bills federally and in state legislatures. In your study of all this for the last couple of years, do you have any ideas on how to get these drug prices down and these horror stories of people just not being able to afford their medicine after it's jacked up?
Yeah, look, I think there's a lot of smart things we could do, Chris, to reduce the prices significantly. And one important issue, I used to sit on the Bristol-Myers drug board, board of directors. You know, we have a stakeholder in this whole U.S. pharmaceutical supply process called the Pharmacy Benefits Manager, PBMs. Most people have never heard of a PBM. But it's a very opaque but highly profitable niche. These guys and gals, I guess, stand between the users of the drug. In other words, you go and fill your prescription at your local pharmacy, and the supplier, which is sometimes not the manufacturer but an intermediary supplier. And the PBMs take a very large profit. It's not clear exactly what they do. It's certainly an area that could be substantially reformed and cost reduced. Florida has put some pressure and focus in the area. And I think there are probably other smart things we can do. But one of them is not bringing in medicines that are made in places that we have no idea who and how and under what conditions they're being made.
Trish Riley thinks drug importation is a good idea to lower healthcare costs.
The people who say it's dangerous are talking about a very different model than what we're proposing here and what Governor DeSantis is proposing.
She's executive director of the National Academy for State Health Policy. It helps write state law.
Personal importation, where somebody uses the internet or individually gets a prescription filled from Canada, has had some problems. And that's the issue that FDA commissioners have weighed in and said it's dangerous. And that's where the focus has been, on the lack of safety in the supply chain. And it's exactly why this proposal takes a different approach, to put the state in the middle, to be the oversight, to make sure that drugs follow the existing supply chain, meet FDA requirements, and are safe and pure.
Did you guys help work on the Florida legislation and the Vermont legislation?
We did. Yeah. We did. We drafted. We had a work group of state officials, a bipartisan work group of state officials, who designed this approach. It would basically put the state would contract with a wholesaler in Canada, a FDA, you know, approved wholesaler in Canada. Drugs would come in, be repackaged, relabeled as they are today, and they would flow directly to the consumers in the state using the existing supply chain that drugs follow today. And importantly, since the arguments about personal importation that you've heard, the market itself has changed. It is a global market. 40% of the drugs we buy today, when you go to your corner grocery store and buy a drug, 40% of those drugs are made someplace else. 80% of the raw products in our drugs are made someplace else. It's already a global market. The supply chain protects the integrity of the drugs. And the proposal in Florida would track that supply chain.
Where are they tested along the way? I guess just samples are taken out of shipments?
They are. Exactly as the FDA requires today.
And your idea, that you're proposing that states do. So do states become sort of the middleman? The states actually buy the drugs from
The states contract with a wholesaler.
Yeah.
who, on their behalf, who purchases, and again, a wholesaler who works in the FDA-approved supply chain of drugs, would contract with a wholesaler in Canada and use the same process of bringing drugs into this country as the FDA has authorized today.
Why are some drugs just cheaper in Canada?
Canada negotiates prices, and basically that's what we're trying to take advantage of. Many of the drugs are about a third of the cost they are here.
So we're just taking advantage of Canadian healthcare law, essentially, their price controls.
That's right.
And why can't we just do that?
We could, but I think there's not been a willingness in this country to do so. It's certainly part of the national debate. There's another proposal that we have floated is a drug affordability review board. Maryland and some other states are looking at that would basically say these very expensive drugs, the rate payers in our state will pay no more than X.
Yeah.
So there is a way to do it. Importation is attractive to the population, I think, because they understand it. We know that it's the same drugs. They're a third less costly. Why not?
How does it work? The Florida bill, I know there was one in Vermont. Do those states then have to work with the federal government? Are there superseding federal laws that need to be dealt with?
They do. The requirement in federal law is the Food and Drug Act basically authorizes the Secretary of HHS to enable to approve a program of importation as long as it assures savings and safety. And clearly, that's part of the bill that's being discussed in Florida.
Well, Trish, thanks a lot for explaining it to me. Trish Riley is Executive Director of the National Academy for State Health Policy. She's the president of its corporate board. Trish, thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Thank you. Take care.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday. President Trump is set to welcome Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to the White House Monday. The two leaders will discuss the U.S. and Israel's shared interests and actions in the Middle East. The planned visit comes just 2 weeks before Israel's election. Apple may put a month-long rumor to rest on Monday. The tech giant is expected to launch a video streaming and an Apple News subscription service later this spring. The news service will offer a Netflix-style bundle for magazines and newspapers.
Wednesday.
A statewide tornado drill is scheduled to take place in Michigan at 1 p.m. Governor Gretchen Whitmer is urging everyone to participate. Tornadoes are common in Michigan during the late spring and early summer months.
Thursday.
Beto O'Rourke is holding various rallies in Texas Thursday. He will start with an official launch rally in his hometown of El Paso, followed by a rally in Houston. The Democratic presidential candidate will end the day with a campaign event in Austin. I'm Anna Eliopoulos, and that's a look at your week ahead.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Jason Chaffetz.
What's on your mind?
I want to talk not only about the Mueller report, but let's remember what's going to happen after the Mueller report. One of the key things that's out there is what Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General for the Department of Justice, is doing in his work to make sure that what the Department of Justice was doing that started the Mueller report, that started as the precursor, was on the up and up. Now, there have been hearings, there's been a lot of news about Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Bruce Orr and Nelly Orr, and what happened there? Why is it that the Department of Justice went to the FISA court and obtained a warrant to spy on people associated with the Donald Trump campaign? How did that happen? Why did that happen? Everything we've seen to date has suggested that maybe that wasn't on the up and up, that maybe there was some misleading of that FISA court. Well, the Inspector General has spent over a year now looking at this very question, and in about 90 days from now, we're gonna hear the answer. That may have more consequence in Washington, D.C. than anything we've seen or heard for in the Mueller report. I'm Jason Chaffetz.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.
It's the new Jerry Willis podcast.
I love giving you an edge with your money. I like to break it all down so that you wind up with more. More money in your pocket, more confidence in your future.
Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Fox News Radio.